First of all, under Appellate Rule 24.1, there are four ways that a judgment debtor may supersede a judgment. The first is by filing with the trial court clerk a written agreement with the judgment creditor for suspending enforcement of the judgment. More about that later. Second, the familiar filing with the trial court clerk a good and sufficient bond. Third, making a deposit in lieu of a bond with the trial court clerk. And fourth, providing alternate security ordered by the court. I'm going to sort of walk through each of these briefly. Money judgment, this is probably fairly familiar to everyone. As far as the amount of the bond is concerned, it must equal the sum of compensatory damages awarded in the judgment, interest for the estimated duration of the appeal, and costs awarded in the judgment. Subject to, of course, the limitation that the amount must not exceed the lesser of 50% of the judgment debtor's current net worth, or $25 million. And 24.2, Rule 24.2B permits a lesser amount of security reduced to an amount that will not cause the judgment debtor substantial economic harm if the court finds after notice and hearing that posting a bond deposit or security in the full amount required by Rule 24.2A is likely to cause the judgment debtor substantial economic harm. Now, it's a pretty basic point, but it bears repeating. The supersedious bond must provide for post-judgment interest. There are a number of cases holding that a bond that does not do so is patently ineffective. And as a practical point, to the extent that appeals pend longer than the time period for which post-judgment interest has been provided, of course, it's fairly common to see motion practice frequently by agreement to supplement the bond or add a rider to the bond to provide for additional post-judgment interest for the continued pendency of the appeal.